So, I guess first of all, thank you everybody who participated in this summer chabura over Zoom. This will be the last one for the season as we're winding up. But I wanted to elaborate a little bit upon an idea that mentioned briefly in shul, not so long ago, but maybe in this format to try to expand upon it. Something talked about on Friday night. And again, not sure everyone, if you were there, I apologize for repetition, but I don't think everybody was there, so maybe we'll just start at the beginning. The pasuk says in Parshas Shoftim, when it's describing who and how many people are allowed to testify, required to testify in Beis Din. The pasuk says in Shoftim, Lo Yakum Eid Echad Ba'ish, you're not allowed to have one witness in Eid Echad. For any to give testifying about any sins that the person did, that you have to have two witnesses, and that's the general rule. There is an exception, as in the Drasha Saran points out that a melech, a Jewish king, is allowed to be an eid echad. He has powers. He has I think they're called extrajudicial powers, things that not necessarily work in the normal framework of Beis Din, but he's allowed to. And there's reasons the Drasha Saran explains why those privileges are granted to the Melech. But in general, you have to have two witnesses in order for the item to have a kiyum, to be accepted. So explain a little bit. If you look here, hold up on my screen, this is the Siddur Alios Eliyahu, Rav Lopiansky's Siddur, if you can see. So when you get the Shema, you have the Shema, the Ayin is large, and you have the Dalit of Echad. And I believe it's the Avudraham, although I was looking in it earlier today, and I didn't see him say this Zvor, but I think that's where it originates from, that the idea of the Ayin in Shema and the Dalit of Echad is Eid, and we say Shema two times a day. The two times of Shema, which is testifying, is the Eidus, once in the morning, once at night, B'shachbachu v'kumecho, that's the Eidus that we have, in other words, that there can be a kiyum for something, that we can focus on the idea of Shema, understand the ideas behind it, and that's how something will last. The Minchas Chinuch is when it talks about why there's a mitzvah, B'shachbachu v'kumecho, in the morning and at night, and he says it's kind of like it's the bookends of our day. Lawrence is in the food business, so he understands what you need a good sandwich. The big sandwiches, right? So imagine your Shema is your sandwich. It's the beginning, it's the one slice at the beginning, and it's the second slice at the end. And everything, all the geschmack that goes into it, but it's framed within the proper misgeret, as the way the Chinuch explains about it. It keeps us oriented throughout the entire day. So first thing in the morning when we get up, we're saying Shema, there's Kriya Shema Shel Shacharis, and Kriya Shema Shel Arvis is what ends off the day, and everything is within that framework of Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shemayim. And that's the way something will have a kiyum, and that's the remez in the hint about having two Eidim in order for the thing to be accepted. With only one Eid, it's not good. It's like, it's loose on one end, either in the morning or at night, but for generals, not for a melech, but for everyone else, you have to have two Eidim, you have to have the two times of Kriya Shema. And this Kabbalah of Ol Malchus Shemayim. And it's true, the Nevi'im already were screaming about this. And certainly throughout the Jewish history, and the Musa movement, and Hasidus, that we fall into the habit, and unfortunately we mitzvahs anashim eludma, we just do mitzvahs by like robots. We don't think about it, we don't ponder the idea Shema, but just to stop and to be mekabel Ol Malchus Shemayim on us and what that means, and that's really an important idea of stopping and pausing. I wanted to share with you something in the biography of the Pnei Menachem, the Ger Rebbe, and he talks about preparing for davening. Now, certainly for Shema as well. On one of his trips to Har HaKarmel, near Haifa, he took an early morning walk on top of Har HaKarmel. It was quiet, and the view of the mountain below and the wide expanse of the Mediterranean was breathtaking. The Rebbe commented to his young grandson who was accompanying him, quote, "You look at the heavens above and realize how giant it is, how great and vast Hashem's world truly is, and how tiny and minuscule we are. With that thought in mind," he concluded, "we can now go and daven." So the Rebbe, the Pnei Menachem, So Chusa Yogi and Elena used to take pre-Shachris walks in order to orientate, to think, and to focus upon, you know, they even have written a schedule of his days, but and when he would write out his minute, his schedule, for how many minutes he spent on each task throughout the day, and it writes it, to make a cheshbon ha-nefesh before each one of the tefillos, and to ponder, and to think, and to focus and orient ourselves. And it continues, as on that note, he once told a group of young galite who came to daven him in Haifa that when he was a child, his father, the Imre Emes, that was the his father, was the he had two brothers-in-laws with the previous wife, was the Beis Yisrael, was his brother-in-law, and the Leif Simcha was his brother, not brother-in-law, sorry, half-brothers. They were all sons, but there was two marriages. But they all came from the same father, Imre Emes. So his father, Imre Emes, told him, it's obligatory to engage in preparation even just a short moment before davening. Listen to this. The least one should do is contemplate, before whom am I davening and why am I davening? Before whom am I davening and why am I davening? Could you imagine? You know, tonight in Shul, we daven Mincha Maariv back to back. What if we would have stopped? You have a klap, chevra, for 1 minute. We're just going to stop to think about who are we davening to and why are we davening. It would have been a different Maariv. That idea about focusing and reading, that's what Shema is all about. That's what davening is all about. But it's a hachana for these things. And to try to remind ourselves and be ma'or ourselves, especially now during Elul Zman, that we do the mitzvahs. Baruch Hashem, we're frum, we're medaktik, we're doing mitzvahs. Kalik b'chamura. But how do we do the mitzvahs? And that's what I want to try to elaborate a little bit on tonight. And discuss one mitzvah of Avas Yisrael. I'm sorry, I said the backwards. The mitzvah of Avas Hashem. I want to talk about the mitzvah of Avas Hashem tonight. Now, where do we get into this? So we're talking about Shema, and in Shul we quoted from the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Chaf Hei, in Sif Dalad, that the Mechaber writes in Hilchus Tefillin. The Mechaber writes, "Tzarech shehiyu tefillin Allah b'shas kriya Shema u'tefila." So a person's required to have tefillin on while they're saying Shema and while they're davening. Now the Mishnah Berurah points out Sif Kotan Yedalad. What does this mean? L'chol apachos, at least the bare minimum amount that you should have them on, b'shas kriya shema tefillah. Right? That's the minimum. It's not that you should only put them on for this, but at least you should have them on. Now, nowadays, we don't do what they did. What they used to do is to wear tefillin all day long. We're not on the madrega of, you know, gufnaki and other reasons. Although they say from Rav Kook, when Rav Kook was a Talmud in Volozhin, that the Netziv allowed him to wear tefillin all day long. The other Bachrim weren't so happy about this. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was not so happy about this, but Rav Kook used to wear tefillin all day long. Well, and there are still people nowadays, Rav Wolfson, Shlita, wears tefillin, I believe, all day long, and others, you could find it. But for us, for simple people like us, we don't wear tefillin all day long. But the bare minimum we should have is for Shema and Tefillah. He continues, common, okay, as it says later on, but Omer Gemara, he quotes in the Gemara, says like this, Kol HaKorei Kriya Shema B'li Tefillin. Anybody who recites the Kriya Shema while not wearing tefillin, harei ke'ilu made edus sheker ba'atzmo chas v'shalom. It's like he's testifying falsely. This whole vort about Shema, and it's an edus. So the Gemara says, if you're going to be reading the Shema, and like it says, k'shartem lo'os alidecha v'ayilu totafos be'enecha, and you're not doing that, so that's like you're saying what you're supposed to be doing, but you're not doing it yourself, so it's like you're testifying falsely. I'm talking about the midst of tefillin, and not wearing tefillin. So you have to do it. Pishu betosfus lefisha omer, because it says in psukim that we say in the Shema ukshartim laos vein kosher. So it's your time and you're not. Va'af b'di'evad yotzai kriya Shema mikomakom yeshlo avera mitzad acher. So technically, you do get the mitzvah. It's not ma'akev. If you say Shema while not wearing tefillin, you do get the mitzvah. Okay, but it's a problem. Shemar atzmo she'ein roitz l'kayim ratzon Hashem yizborach. You make it look as if you really don't want to do what Hashem says, because you're not doing it. You're talking about it, but you're talking the talk, but you're not walking the walk. V'zeh edus sheker shemeid al atzmo. And that's the false testimony that he has to himself. And then, skip a little bit, it says, v'kosu b'sefer charedim. The sefer charedim is a very important work which talks about the mitzvos, and they're grouped by which limb of the body a person uses to perform that mitzvah. So I think the first mitzvah he discusses is emunah. What parts of our body do we use to actually perform the mitzvah of emunah? It's a fascinating way of grouping them. You know, you don't find this. You find classifications of mitzvahs aseh, mitzvahs lo aseh. You find classifications of deraisas versus derabbanan. But to classify the mitzvahs as to what limb of your body you do, that's how I believe the Sefer Charedim goes. So the Mishnah Berurah here is quoting, and I'm reading to you the Sefer Charedim from the Sefer. He says like this: "Dimizen nilmad because she'omer v'ahavta es Hashem." If the whole purpose that we're doing this because we don't want to testify falsely, well, what happens when we're saying in Shema, you should love Hashem? Abbas Hashem Yisborach Belibo. At that point, when you're talking about the mitzvah of loving Hashem, a person should feel and put into their hearts this love of Hashem. It shouldn't be like a person is speaking falsely, chas v'shalom, one of them. So now, let's try to develop this a little bit. How do we do this? How do we really feel, how do we love Hashem? There's a mitzvah of avas Hashem. We talk a lot about in Elul, about yiras Hashem, and that's true. Now, the Bilvavi discusses which one should a person work on first. Should they start with yiras Hashem? Should they start with avas Hashem? There's no right answer. For certain people in their avodah, it's easier to work on the avodah Hashem of Yira. And others, the Ava is easier. But there's not a right or wrong in terms of which order. There's different madregas of that. And to speak out the different levels, just like in any mitzvah we do, there's different levels of it. But let's go slow. He brings here about how to do this. I'm reading now in the Dirshu, V'haderech lehagi lekach. How does a person put Avas Hashem into the heart, especially because they don't want to testify falsely, and we're reciting. Again, just to put in context, just like we want to make sure we have tefillin on, because we're reading the psukim about that, well, we want to make sure that we have Avas Hashem when we're reading the psukim to talk about the mitzvah of loving Hashem. So, Kosu b'sifro shmiras haloshen, brings in the Chafetz Chaim Sefer shmiras haloshen, she yizbonin begalus habori. A person should think deeply about the greatness of Hashem. That's what we just read a minute ago from the biography in Pnei Menachem. V'romamuso, and how exalted and how elevated Hashem is, shumechaye kol ha'olamos. He brings chias constantly to all of the world. In the Tanya, he explains, what does that mean Hashem gives chias to every world? So, one of my rabbinim gave a mashal like this. You know, nowadays, they're doing all sorts of fancy schmancy doorbells, but imagine you'd have your hand like on a buzzer, and you the kolzman that your finger's on that buzzer, the doorbell rings, you hear the buzz. But if you take your finger off for a split second, then the doorbell stops. So nowadays we don't have like that, but there used to be such a thing. So if you would imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu, again, it's only a mashal, but imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his finger on the universe. He's constantly pushing and being mechaye, causing the whole world to come into existence. And if chas v'shalom, Kodesh Baruch Hu would take his finger away, would remove that chias for even a split second, all of us, everything would just constantly, we would be gone. We would cease to exist. The only thing we have that brings us into existence is a Kodesh Baruch Hu's will. There's a chias to us. And that's the idea about having the finger on the button and taking the finger off. You know, they tell a joke about the two bachim, and they're arguing, Hashem's going to destroy the world. How's he going to do it? So one says he's going to bring a hurricane, he's going to bring a tsunami, he's going to bring earthquakes and fire. And the other one says, no, Hashem's just going to stop thinking about the world for a split second. He's going to take his finger off the button, and the whole world ceases to exist. The end of the world, poof, we're all gone. So that's the idea, to think about the HaKadosh Baruch Hu in every point of our lives is constantly willing us. That's the theme of Moda'ani. Hashem, Rabba Amunasecha. Hashem, your Amunah is great in me. You brought me into this world. You give me chias for another day. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. We took a trip with the three youngest ones. And so I don't know who did this on my phone. They made a playlist for the three-year-old, right? So the playlist has only three songs. So the way it works is you hear the same three songs over and over and over again, right? So what were the three songs? Thank You, Hashem, right? That was one of them. Eitan Katz is Shabbos, My Brother's Holy Sabbath, right? The Shabbos Kodesh. And the third song that we heard over and over again on our two-hour drive was Joey Newcomb's The Crack from the Pickle, right? So it says, thank you, Hashem. But there's a beautiful line in there. I heard it. over and over and over again. Every detail in our life is a kiss from Hashem. So true. Every detail in our life is a kiss from Hashem. I didn't know the kids got into the act of saying, "Oi, the pickle!" If you heard the niggin, right, you know what I'm talking about. Lawrence, you'll ask Ari for sure. He knows the pickle niggin. But the idea is that to realize that the song is true. Every detail in our life is a kiss from Hashem. Uvehefech. Now I'm going to read back inside in the Dershu. They have the opposite. The great Hashem and the chesed He's giving to us. Katnas erech nafsho. Zeruso zuloso. How small we are in comparison to Hashem. Then so a person thinks about that. And really, again, not just a one-off, but they really think about that. Va'achakach yakir, rav tuv habori alav, b'hasmadas tovosov, meyom hayosa al ha'aretz, lo lefi ma'asov. And a person thinks about how great and how kind and how amazing Hashem has been to me, and I'm not deserving of it. If someone was to give me something that I was not deserving of, I would be so thankful for that. I'd be so thankful to that. And then he says, especially when we think about all the mistakes we've made during Elzman, it's a time for focusing and making a cheshbon. But when a person follows that formula, as the Chafetz Chaim tells us in his Sefer, of realizing the greatness of Hashem, and then comparing that to the level that we're at, that is what will bring the love of Hashem into us. And I want to continue with this idea again, working on loving Hashem from the Bilvavi. Sefer we've had the privilege to learn from throughout the years. And when he discusses the mitzvah d'oraisa, right, of avas Hashem, he explains it, you know, just like with all mitzvos, there's madrigas. There's different levels when you could talk about avas Hashem. Two levels which we're familiar with from Pirkei Avos. That there's an Ava Tuli B'Dover, there's an Ava She'en Tuli B'Dover. There's conditional love, and there is unconditional love. Now, the Jews have the special, unique opportunity of having an unconditional love to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Masha'en came by the Goyim. But the Jews have the ability of this unconditional love, and Hiraya is the Gemara in Sanhedrin in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Dalet. The Gemara over there talks about a person's allowed to give tzedakah, Almanas, on condition that my Sheikh Ibn, my son, will live, that I'll be zoichet to having a Olam Haba, and the Gemara says he's considered to be a tzaddik. What do you mean, he's a tzaddik? He put a condition on this. I'm giving this coin to tzedakah because I want my kid to have a refuah shleima. And you go, you're a tzaddik for that? Sounds like you're trying to buy a favor. So Rashi HaKadosh tells us, because deep down a Jew wants to do mitzvahs, and even if the intention wasn't fulfilled, what we were asking for, we chalk it up to our own deficiencies. And that's why it wasn't. But really, a person wants to, is willing to give to a good cause, right? And that's important. Now, unconditional love is obviously a higher madrega, but we have to work. The Chaim Volozhiner points out that on the idea of mitoch shelo lishma bo lishma, that's a ladder. You can't jump in life, in the Avodas Hashem, you can't jump past the Shelo Lishma level. You can't jump past the, I have unconditional love towards Hashem. We have to work on it on a conditional way and get to that point, which was certainly possible, but that's the idea, is to build it up step by step and to work on this. And in the Bilvavi, he gives a very practical etzis for how to come to this. And the first step in the equation is to recognize that Hashem has done great things for us. And we should know that Hashem has done great things for us. Like the Gemara says in Shabbos and Dav Yud, that Shabbos, I had this unbelievable matana and beis ganov, my hidden chambers. Lech lodi Elohim, go tell, Hashem's the Moshe, go tell the Bnei Yisrael, I had this unbelievable gift called Shabbos. It wouldn't be enough just to have Shabbos. Listen to this. It wouldn't be enough to have Shabbos. Part of having Shabbos is knowing that Hashem gave it to us. That when you're given a precious gift, you should understand that somebody gave that and to know that. But just to have it without realizing it, then that's some sort of lacking. So he explains this idea. He gives a mashal of a person sitting at a table, and somebody places a drink of water down there for him. But he doesn't know who it was. I didn't do it. I was just sitting here. Somebody came by and put a glass of water. I don't know, fill in the blank, a Diet Coke, a good peach Snapple. They put your coffee, a start, whatever it is. There's something on the table now, and I didn't do it. Who put it there? Who gave me this object? Who brought this item into my life? I should know who it is. I want to know who it is, because if I don't know who it is, I'll be unable to express my Hakar Satov and my appreciation, my thanks for the person who took the time out to give this to me. So we have to know the identity of that. But if I don't know who it is, then there's no one or no person, no identity to focus the object of my love towards. I can't love it. I don't know who it is. Part of the Inyan of Shabbos, the Inyan of Avas Hashem, is to know that it's all coming from Hashem, and that it's not coming from his verse. So there's really two parts. The first step, as we just said, is that you have to realize that someone other than yourself did a favor for you, right? And the second thing is you have to identify who is the benefactor. Without these two, then we can't even start to. Oops, excuse me. Without these two things, we can't even have, conditional love, an avatoli bedover. Now, certainly, we want to get to higher madrigas, but we have to realize at the end of the day, it's all coming from Hashem. I had a conversation with the Tosher Rebbe of Muncie, with Avram Katz Shlita. If you remember, he came before this craziness. He came to the shul, and we had a tish. Michael, you remember that? You were there that night? Lawrence, you were there, right? Yeah? Ira, were you there? He came. We had a tish. The Rebbe spoke. So I was on the phone with him earlier this summer, and he told me a beautiful vort. I'm going to read you the pasuk. I don't think it was Parshas Akiv. Maybe it was around that time, but the pasuk says like this. V'zacharte es Hashem elokecho, ki hu hanoisin lecha koach lasos chayel. Right, you should remember that Hashem is the one who gives you koach, the ability to do strong things. So he told me over the unklus. Now again, we're Marva Sadr, but if you don't, we got to think about what he's saying. We can't just run through the motions. We got to think about this. I'm going to read you the eight. He says like this: V'sidka, you should remember Yas Hashem elokach, arehu yahiv loch eitza lemikne nichsin. He's the one who gave you all the eitzes, all the advice, all that those good thoughts and that plan and this business model and that business model. Who even gave a person the eitza? Is the suggestion, the thought? The thought itself comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's huge to realize, to incorporate that nothing we have is from our own. We like to think, percentage-wise, I did 95% of the work, and Hashem did the other 5. No, we don't do anything. We don't do anything without Hashem. We're nothing without Hashem. So the question is, how do we get to that? How do we reach this level of awareness, right? So a person, Baruch Hashem, Michael made a wedding this summer, right? Those things. How was I zoichet to get such a good chosen? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Person might think, certain good qualities on my side, certain good qualities on their side, or a business deal. The person makes a great business deal. Well, of course, the deal was going to go through because I have, these resources, and he had this, and then the marketing, and then, we all work together. Of course, it had to be like that. That's the, quote, normal way of thinking about things. But that person is what everything comes from Hashem. Everything. A person's thoughts, their wisdom. Let's say a person is smart. That brain power, that kishron, that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We didn't do anything. It all came from Hashem. He brings a powerful mashal in a sefer. He says, imagine the following. In this case, he's talking about the wealth, actually. Imagine a guy, an armed guard, right? Picture the scene, when they're doing a bank transfer of funds. And the armed guard is sitting there, and he goes to the bank, and he's got his truck parked outside. And what does he do? He picks up $250,000 cash. And he's carrying that $250,000 from the bank into the car. Does he think for a second that while he's walking down the street holding this money, that he's wealthy? This is my money? No. doesn't think like that. Why not? He's a rich man. Look how much cash. He's got $250,000 on him. Teretz is because he knows it's not his. And when a person goes through life, whatever I have, we think it's ours because it's in our bank longer than 5 seconds, longer than 5 years, than 50 years. Everything that we have in our lives is only from Hashem. It's a kiss from Hashem, but it's all from Hashem. We don't do anything. And the more a person feels and incorporates this anything, any advantage that we have, or property or wisdom, these are all articles of clothing that Hashem has lent us to use. And we have to remind it. We have to remind ourselves that it's all a gift. You know, there's a very talented musician, Stevie Ray Vaughan. I think he died in a tragic helicopter crash in 1990. I remember where I was when I heard the news. Such a talented guy. If you know a little bit about his life, he struggled with alcoholism, and he overcame it. And in the biographies about him, he talks about how he realized that everything's a gift, and you just have to give it away, or else you lose it. And that again, a person who's gone through the traumatic addiction and struggling with that, and comes to this realization, kol hakavod, but we shouldn't have to reach that point. We should stop and pause. And again, this is what we're talking about, thinking about it, but pausing before we daven, before we say a Shema, and these ideas will be ma'orer abas Hashem. We'll come to realize that how we have, that everything we have, we're guardians. We're it's a pikadon that's left by us. Our children, it's a pikadon. They're not ours. We guard them. We're responsible for them. We have to return them back in the best condition possible. But everything we have, our bodies, everything, it's not my body. I have nothing. I push to have nothing. And when a person thinks like that, again, it's a lot to talk about, but when a person really thinks and meditates deeply for months and months and works on these ideas, realizes that everything belongs to Hashem, so then we don't get so angry anymore. Because I get angry when someone damaged me, right? It's my object, and I get upset about it, but when I realize it's not my object. Again, we have to be sensible, but the person broke my watch. That wasn't my watch. I don't have anything. But that sense of ownership, I should say, that's what creates, anger and frustration and machlokis. And we have to really remind ourselves that it's all coming from Hashem. And that's what it really is. Even the eitzes that we have, as we saw from the Targum, that everything we have is a gift from Hashem, but it's all Hashem. It's all Hashem. There's a very big tzaddik who lived in Eretz Israel. He passed away, Moshe Shapiro Zatzal. And he used to give very, very high-level shiurim in Machshava. I think one of his close talmidim was Rabbi Dr. Akiva Tatz. If any of you have heard of Rabbi Tatz, his excellent books, Living Inspired, A World Mask, Anatomy of a Search. I think there's the Jewish teenager's thinking guide to life. Yeah, excellent writer. He's a very fantastic speaker. He has an accent. Well, obviously he has an accent. He'll get up and say he comes from South Africa. He says, "I bet you've never heard English spoken without an accent." Right? But he's a funny, entertaining, very deep speaker. So he told a story about Moshe Shapiro Zatzal. The one time there was an amazing story of Hashkacha Pratis. Without going through all the details, apparently a person had to fly around the world, and it turns out the person who was flying around the world to go meet was actually in the plane sitting directly next to him. And the guy got so excited, and wow. He was like, he was able to work this whole thing out on the one plane ride, and train his thing. So he ran to Rav Moshe Shapiro with a lot of hislavas, and he told the Rav everything that happened, this amazing Hashkacha. And he was very calm. Rav Moshe was very calm, listened to his whole story. And he said, something like, Ma ta rotze labi rayash HaKadosh Baruch Hu manhig et olamo? Like, what's the big deal? What's the big fuss over? You want to bring me a proof that God runs his own world? Of course he does. Like it wasn't a big deal to him. And by the tzaddikim, these stories of Hashkacha, they don't affect them. And in fact, it'd be so bold, it's almost a disservice. Let's speak this out. Why is it a disservice to always get worked up about these amazing Hashkacha Pratis? Because it makes it seem as if it's only in these amazing stories where the right person was in the right place, then Hashem is running his world. And what? And when he's not running the world, when things don't go exactly the way I think they're supposed to, when the appointment, I'm running late for the meeting, or I missed my train or my plane or my ride came late, or something happened that I didn't think of. And what? Hashem's not running the world then? He's only running the world when everything plunk falls right into place? Of course not. So in a certain aspect, these types of amazing hashkacha pratis stories do a disservice. And you know, I'm going to read you a quote from the Bilvavi about this particular issue. Let me see if I can find it. We hear many wondrous stories about special divine providence. Hundreds of such stories are circulated, many of them in print. It's difficult for one who lives with a minimal degree of inwardness to hear these stories, for the simple reason that they actually take away from the proper relationship we're to have with Hashem through the daily events of our lives. Instead of waking up and sensing that it's Hashem who enables one to stand up, some people make the mistake of thinking they see the Creator only when something extraordinary happens. Certainly, if one's far from Emunah, these stories could serve as a first stage to get him to appreciate the concept of divine providence, right? Hashkacha Pratis. But to stop there and build one's perspective on life based on such stories does a disservice to Hashem and his uninterrupted guidance of the world. The proper way is to live is that just as you feel Hashem's guidance when special miraculous events occur, so must you feel his guidance each day and each hour. Really what he's working on, it would seem, is the Ramban. The famous Ramban, Parshas Bo, where he says that the sun which rises every single day is no less miraculous than a Kriyas Yam Suf, right? It's not only when there's something supernatural that the laws of nature are suspended that, oh, wow, God's running the world. Hashem is running the world every single detail in our lives at all times. And we think about these ideas and we realize that it's all from Hashem, that we don't really have anything on our own, nothing. How small we are vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the Sefer the Chafetz Chaim was writing about. That was these pre-chakras walks of the Pnei Menachem. That's what the Bilvavi is talking about. I think these are some tangible ideas and programs that we could think about as we're working very hard to work on our Avas Hashem, especially during this month of Elul. You know, as we said at the beginning, that some people, Yiras Hashem, and that's the way they work on it first. And others, Avas Hashem. But we should understand what it means to have Avas Hashem. Now, again, there's obviously much more to talk about beyond the scope of tonight, but to at least get our feet wet and to start discussing the ideas and to challenging it. You know, if you would have said before this year tonight, you know, Vus is Schlecht, what's so bad about telling stories about an amazing Hashkacha? Nothing wrong with it, but it can't stop there. And certainly if that inspires a person and builds up a person, great, but that's not the point. The point, the goal of coming to Avas Hashem is to see Hashem, like the song goes, from the crank and the pickle. Oy, the pickle! To see Hashem in everything. Every detail in our lives is a kiss from Hashem. With that, I want to say thank you to everybody for this whole amazing summer we had learning together. We, Meretz Hashem, are putting together our schedules for after Sukkot. Some shirim will be in the shul, in person. We've already started. The Hilchot Shabbos Chabura is live between 2 minyanim on Shabbos morning. And some will have on Zoom as well, but please stay tuned and we'll give updates as everything starts to come into focus and fall into place. I want to wish everybody an amazing Shabbos, and thank you again for learning with us.